This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. La Crosse County is ranked 53rd in the state when it comes to quality of life, according to the 2019 County Health Rankings from the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute. That ranking is based not only on residents' physical health, but also on their mental health, a topic which is being tackled by a group of healthcare providers, researchers, local K-12 schools, and other community organizations. Today, we're getting an update on the latest work of the La Crosse Medical Health Science Consortium to improve mental health in the community. We're here with Katherine Kolkmeyer, Executive Director of the La Crosse Medical Health Science Consortium, and Alicia Place, Community Services Coordinator for the School District of La Crosse. Katherine, can you start by explaining what the La Crosse Medical Health Science Consortium is?
Sure. We are a partnership of seven different organizations involved in healthcare and education. So that includes both of our medical systems, Gunderson and Mayo, as well as our higher education institutions, UWL, Viterbo, and Western, and also the School District of La Crosse and the County Health Department. So together, our mission is fostering collaborations for better, for healthier communities. And this is an example of some of the work that we do in the community, trying to work with joint funding if we can, bringing partners together, even outside of our seven partners, to address health issues in the community.
Right, so this initiative started with a $1.5 million grant that the consortium received in 2016. And I wonder if you could remind us where that grant came from and what it was for.
Sure. That was the grant that was given from the Medical College of Wisconsin through their Advancing a Healthier Wisconsin Endowment. And it was a strategic effort by the Medical College to focus on behavioral health around the state. So they awarded 10 different communities $1.5 million over 8 years. And each of us are working on improving behavioral health in our community. We're working together in terms of project planning, but we're working separately in terms of the issues in our own community. And our effort is called Better Together, and we're focusing on youth mental health.
So why youth mental health?
By focusing on youth, it really gives us a chance to address the entire community, because working with youth, we are working on the future adults, by focusing on youth age 12 through 18. That gives us an opportunity to address kids when they're a bit younger and before they are out on their own in the community. So by improving their mental health and building coping mechanisms and building their resilience as youth, we're building stronger adults. But when you're working with youth, you also need to work with the adults around them, like their parents and people who interact with youth. And so that gives us a broader view on the entire community.
Alicia, I wonder what your thoughts are on why kids are a really important population to focus on when it comes to mental health.
Yeah, I think really similarly to what Katherine stated, our students, our kiddos, I often refer to them as students, our kiddos, youth, they do grow up to be the adults in our community. And certainly focusing on our youth is where that's a great investment, right? We're going to put a lot of time, money, effort into our youth, because that's where our community is for the future. So it's very much what Katherine said. It's an important population to work with.
And how often are kids struggling with mental health issues? You know, do we have an understanding of the prevalence of this issue?
Yeah, I think that we definitely see a lot of mental health issues in the school district, but, I think that could be said probably nationwide right now, too. For probably many different reasons and factors, kiddos are either experiencing mental health issues and they're acting out with that, or they internalize. And so you kind of see both in a school setting. You see the kiddos who are really quiet or withdrawn to themselves. Then you also see the kiddos who act out or maybe have some more apparent behavior issues. So definitely it is prevalent in our community, in our schools.
Katherine, I wonder if you can explain a little bit more about what Better Together focuses on.
Better Together is focusing on, as I said before, focusing on the mental health of youth age 12 to 18, but also focusing on the adults around them. And so our aim is to reduce the risk of depression among youth by looking at with the youth themselves, building coping mechanisms, building resilient skills so that they are able to focus on improving their own mental health and having those skills as adults. And then also the other side of that is building informal support. So an informal support is somebody who's not within the traditional medical or healthcare system, but that includes parents, neighbors, employers, people who work with kids, teachers, health staff, community staff, anybody who is engaged with a young person and helping them understand what youth mental health is, what the challenges are that kids are living with right now, and how they can respond to it in a compassionate way.
And so how do you see people in the community kind of interacting with this project? You know, what will be their kind of experience in seeing this work?
Well, one of the ways that we are engaged in this, I mean, May is Mental Health Month, Mental Health Awareness Month, and one of the ways that we've been interacting directly with adults in the community is by offering training in mental health first aid. So tomorrow we have an all-day training. We're going to train over 150 people at one time in mental health first aid and both adult and youth mental health first aid. That is one direct way that adults can be helpful to recognizing mental health issues among kids and adults. We're also engaged in a larger effort in the community to develop a resilient and trauma-informed community overall, and that is a larger partnership beyond Better Together that involves a lot of the same partners but is trying to go even broader to introduce the concepts of building resilience and understanding the histories that kids come with in terms of traumas they may have experienced and how that affects their behavior.
And Alicia, I wonder if you can share, you know, how this project is maybe changing things within the La Crosse mm-hmm. School District, you know, maybe trying new strategies to get at this problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really excited about this project, this framework. I think that as a community, there's pockets of people or agencies or groups who have been trying to do things that are considered trauma-informed for many, many years. There are certainly people in our community who have been having these conversations for several years. But this framework, like Catherine said, really reaches out to a broader community and gets us all speaking the same language, and I think that's so incredibly important. All of us to be talking about the same thing so that we're not trauma-confused, as we like to say sometimes. And so for the school district, it just really helps put things into that framework. It helps us start from the beginning, having that foundation, having that common language, knowing what it is that we're, that perspective shift that we're needing to make. So I think it's exciting. It's also very exciting that it really brings together a lot of different agencies and people in the community to be working on this together. It's certainly mental health issues, trauma, and youth is not something that school alone can solve. I think so often school becomes a target for intervention because the kids are there. So that's where they are. That's where we should do the intervention. And certainly there's a place for that, of course. But this is an issue that we know as school officials, it reaches beyond that. We need to engage families and community stakeholders and community members and mentors. And if we're going to help youth, it's going to take all hands on deck. And so I think this project really helps educate the entire community. You don't have to be a professional working in a social services agency for this to be applicable to what you do and how you interact with people on a daily basis.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about a new initiative on trauma-informed care for children in the La Crosse area. We're here with Alicia Place from the La Crosse School District and Catherine Kolkmeyer from the La Crosse Medical Health Science Consortium. You know, Alicia, this idea of sharing a common language, Catherine, I know that has been something that the consortium has talked about, like a real need in our community to improve communication across agencies. I wonder if you can share how you see this project really tackling that.
Right. What we're doing right now, actually, we are engaged in, as Alicia said, the first stage of this overall framework that we have designed for building a resilient and trauma-informed community is in building a foundation. And by building a foundation, we have offered a training session that includes a film called Resilience that is what we identified as being an excellent rallying point for the community to learn more about what's called adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs. Understanding things that happen to children and have happened to many adults when they were children, as well as understanding the impact of those traumas on adult life and adult health, and the approaches that are available to address that, which would be trauma-informed care, and also in building resilience. So if somebody has experienced trauma as a child, if they also have resilience factors, that gives them more of an opportunity to bounce back from the traumas that have happened to them. And so the training that we offer to build that foundation, we have two different levels of it. One is focused on just introducing these concepts and connecting them to the work that people do in the community and understanding what kind of a community we would like to have. And then a second level is focusing on building empathy skills. So not so much focusing on the workplace, but working with you as an individual and thinking about how to be more compassionate and understanding and empathetic in talking with other people.
Alicia, you mentioned trauma confusion, needing to have a common vocabulary. And I wonder if you could take a moment to explain, like, what are the common traumas that we're seeing among children, and what does it mean to provide trauma-informed care?
Yeah, so ACEs, or adverse childhood experiences, really, it's a list of 10 different adverse childhood experiences, but what we know is that's not an all-inclusive list. Certainly, there's many things that could affect children and be considered traumatic, and it also really depends on what those resilience factors are in a kiddo's life. So things like a natural disaster or family divorce, things like that could affect kids different ways. The kinds of traumas that we see a lot of are children who are victims of abuse or neglect, also children who are growing up in homes where substance use is happening, drugs, alcohol, things like that. That certainly can affect many aspects for a kiddo of their life. So parents fighting, adults in their home fighting, community, neighborhood violence, those are all things that certainly can impact a child and their development. And that really is what is, at the heart of all of this, is that children who experience traumatic events have the potential to have just some like long-term health outcomes. Brain development is physically and literally changed. So we see a lot of varying degrees of things in the school. To be more trauma-informed versus trauma-confused, I think that when you first hear that a kiddo's gone through a lot of things or is currently going through a lot, your first instinct is to kind of give them a pass and just, okay, we're going to not have expectations. And what we know is that that actually is probably more detrimental and more harmful, to not hold kids accountable and have expectations. But it's helping the kiddos manage and learn how to manage those behaviors, those feelings. That's what we really need to be doing to be trauma-informed. So having our classroom set up, understanding that for kiddos coming in with some experiences, seating arrangement, noises, not having a routine or knowing what's going to come next can really affect a kiddo. So those are all different ways that we can be more trauma-informed, building relationships with kids, which, you know, all teachers do. That's part of being a good teacher, right? A good educator is building relationships, knowing about a kid and what their family and what their situation is, but also just knowing about a kid and what they like to do, what they enjoy to do, what they enjoy reading about, what they're currently reading. That's the kind of conversations that can be happening too. So all of those things definitely lead to being more trauma-informed in the classroom.
Catherine, when did this idea of providing more trauma-informed care for children, you know, really kind of come up? And how do you think we're doing in the La Crosse area when it comes to incorporating this idea?
This is an idea that's been in this community for quite a long time. The original study that established the term adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs, called the ACE study, was done in 1998. And it really didn't get a lot of traction for quite a few years. I first started hearing about it about 10 years ago, or maybe even more than that. It was originally a study on obesity, and the researcher who did the study was looking at people who had regained their weight after losing it and discovered that so many of them had a history of abuse in their families that they started looking at that more specifically. And so that started to gain traction. There are a number of people here in this community who really grabbed onto that and have developed resources in the medical centers, in education. The school district has been looking at it for quite a while. So it's not something that's new to the community, but it's, as with any other sort of cultural shift, it's something that's taken time to gain momentum. So this isn't a project that could have happened successfully 5 or 6 years ago or 10 years ago, because people weren't talking about it enough. It wasn't something that was on people's minds. This is something that has gained attention nationwide now, and communities are starting to focus on how they can be more trauma-informed within institutions, but also as a whole community. So I think the time is right. And like I said, a lot has been done, and we don't want to forget the folks who have been involved in this and try to keep them involved in the work that we're doing today, because we're not new to it. What we're trying to do now is to pull people together and create sort of that common background where we can all work from the same place, and where a patient or anybody in your community, as a whether they're a patient or a customer or a student or however they interact with an organization or with another person, that they're hearing the same thing, so they're getting a common message. And so that's really what we're trying to accomplish now.
Yeah, Alicia gave us some great examples of what this looks like in a school setting, but I wonder if you can share how other organizations can embrace trauma-informed care.
Sure. Really, it's recognizing what is causing people to act the way they do. One of the best phrases I've heard, and our team's heard me say it a million times, is that I had learned was that every behavior is a communication. We just need to know what people are communicating. And that's true for children. It's also true for adults. So if you think of a time when something immediate has happened and you react in a bad way, if the person you're reacting to doesn't know what happened in your past or what's happened in your immediate past, what happened to you that day, they're not going to understand why you're acting the way they are. They might react by getting angry back at you. So that's an example that's a really simple and proximal example of what happens when something bad triggers a bad behavior. If you think about the long-term impacts of having experienced abuse, having experienced neglect, and facing that every day, having drugs in the home, having abuse of your parents going on in your home, and then you come to a school and somebody asks you to learn math, that's not the top of your priorities right then, because you've got a lot happening in your life. And so working with children to understand why they behave the way they do also applies to adults, because this doesn't stop when you get out of school. If you've had a difficult childhood and had to face completely different situations than other people might not understand what it is that you've experienced, and they might not understand how that affects your behavior today. So being trauma-informed then in any organization is recognizing where behaviors come from, not needing to know what those are necessarily. You don't need to know what happened to someone, but just recognizing the fact that bad things happen to people, and it doesn't matter who. It just means treating people with compassion and understanding that there's a reason for people's behavior. So that's true with employees. It's true with customers. It's true with neighbors. Just taking that moment to back up a second and to think, this might be coming from another place. This might not be about me. They might not be reacting to me. They might be reacting to something that they're reminded of or something that they've experienced before. So it's really just a matter of treating people with compassion, really.
Yeah, Alicia, what do we know about how trauma can impact the rest of a person's life, that this is really carried beyond the school mm-hmm. setting?
Right, it really is. So that study that Catherine was referring to, the ACEs study, really what it showed was 40 possible health outcomes. And what I think people typically think about when they think about kids who have experienced abuse, neglect, some sort of trauma, they think about like substance abuse, drug abuse, depression, anxiety. Those are things that we can easily correlate and say like that would be more obvious. But what the study was also showing is there's a lot less obvious, you know, pulmonary disease, heart disease, things that you wouldn't necessarily think would be connected with early experiences of childhood, we're finding are. So it really is a public health issue, a public health crisis, because it really is affecting physical health, mental health. That's the whole person. That affects how an adult is able to function in society, function with their family. You know, these youth are going to grow up and potentially become parents themselves. And so passing that on to how they parent, it definitely has that ripple effect in the entire community. So it's a lot of those health outcomes. I think about our youth who have so much chaos or things going on in the home or in their neighborhood, and they come to school, and then they're trying to sort all of that out, and they may not even have words to talk about the feelings that they're feeling. So those are really important things, too, so that we can grow up to just really be healthy, social, emotional, mentally, physically, that whole child is affected.
That's Alicia Place from the La Crosse School District here with us today to talk about how local healthcare providers, K-12 schools, researchers, and other organizations are incorporating trauma-informed care for kids. She's joined by Catherine Kolkmeyer from the La Crosse Medical Health Science Consortium. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. So, Catherine, we are now 3 years into this grant project. And so I wonder if you can share kind of what's happened over the last 3 years.
Well, in addition to branching out and bringing in additional partners for the resilient and trauma-informed community effort, and also offering the mental health first aid programming, we have also been working with a number of schools to develop more of a mental health curriculum. I know we've worked with schools in Onalaska and some of the other school districts in the region to look at how they're incorporating mental health into their health curriculum. We've been trying to bring together school leadership from across different districts to talk about how they can change their practices. And also working with an intern program through Viterbo and we have an intern who we had helped place in one of the schools in Holman so that they could work directly with kids. Something else that we've been involved with is helping the PATCH program. PATCH is a youth program where they are using youth who are speaking up for themselves and interacting with health officials and health care providers to learn more about how to communicate with teens, which has been a really interesting project to watch. But most of our effort has been in helping to build this resilience and trauma-informed care or trauma-informed community effort. And that has really changed the direction of the work that we've been doing in Better Together.
Yeah, I was going to ask if there have been experiences or revelations that have, helped kind of shape the scope of this project as it continues.
Yeah, what we've really changed our focus on is it's not just about getting right in front of a child and giving direct services or getting right in front of an adult and giving direct services, but in changing the way people approach the work that they do. So we all interact with children. We all interact with adults. How can we change the way they do that so that it is compassionate, it is trauma-informed, it is an understanding of the larger picture for each person? One of the things that you hear all the time when looking at ACEs and trauma-informed care is the shift in perspective from a perspective of what's wrong with you to what happened to you. And our argument is that you don't necessarily need to know what happened specifically. We don't on a day-to-day basis. You don't need to know exactly what happened to another person, but just being aware of the fact that that is so common and is so impactful that it helps to assume that you are potentially always dealing with that kind of a situation, no matter who you're talking to. and that everyone is deserving of compassion and understanding. And so by changing that focus from what can we do for kids or what can we do for the people around kids to what can we do to shift the way the community interacts with kids and adults, I think that's been one of the biggest changes, because that takes it beyond us. It takes it beyond all of our individual organizations. This effort that we've developed is not owned by any of us. It's not a project of Better Together. It's not a project of the school district. It is it's more universal than that. And any one of us could drop out of it and it would still continue on. So that's the idea, is that we're finding people within other organizations who are willing to carry this message forward so that we're all speaking the same language and using these same techniques to better the way we interact with one another.
Back in 2016, when we first spoke about this grant and you know the plans the consortium had for this project, you mentioned that not everyone needs care from a psychiatrist, a psychologist, a traditional healthcare provider.
Right.
And I wonder if that idea has continued to influence this project, and it sounds like it has in
Absolutely.
Reaching out to other organizations or individuals in the community.
Definitely. And that's where the idea of an informal support came from. So that is one of the principles of this project, was that there's so much that can happen before you get to a point of needing professional care. Some people are always going to need professional care. There are very serious mental health issues and mental illnesses that some folks are dealing with. But a lot of folks are not having to, they're not at a crisis level. And there are so many different interactions that can impact whether you reach a crisis level or not. And how much can we do as a community to address things early and not just look at mental health, but look at the whole person. So if somebody is getting their needs met early on and is not getting more and more frustrated and is not getting farther and farther down the discipline path in terms of both children and maybe employees, how can we interact with people differently so that doesn't happen? If you can provide the resiliency building skills and the coping skills early on, there are a lot of crises that can be avoided. So that's where we get into helping kids directly and helping adults directly, but also in a way that is more universal to the whole community, so that we're not just focusing on waiting for an emergency to happen and somebody needing psychiatric care.
Alicia, how do you see these informal supports and providers playing a role in kids' lives?
Yeah, absolutely. So when Catherine was talking, I was definitely thinking about just teachers in our day-to-day classrooms. So much of our social emotional learning can absolutely be weaved into everyday lessons. There's a lot to be pulled from, you know, history or reading or even math to talk about identifying feelings, trying to project and think about, gosh, how would that person feel in this situation? That can be woven into so many different activities within a regular classroom. In our elementary schools, all of our kiddos get a regular guidance curriculum, and a part of that is certainly the social-emotional piece, as well as protective behaviors. If negative things are happening or scary things are happening or uncomfortable things are happening, giving kids tools to speak up or who they're going to talk to about that, how they're going to get out of those situations. So our regular classroom guidance is delivered in all of our elementary schools. But I think that when we're talking about, you know, whether that's every 6 days or every 30 days or whenever it is, that can daily be happening in classrooms. And then into our middle and high schools, same thing. It doesn't necessarily have to be a curriculum, although, you know, there certainly is that aspect that can help if teachers need that. But when we're talking with kids, helping them to mediate a recess issue, having a classroom meeting, a lot of my background is working in an elementary school, and so much we talk about our classrooms being our family. And so having family meetings and having those conversations, that can be woven in. And that doesn't take a special person or, for many people, even special training, although we can do that. Because for some teachers, it's just more of a comfort level than others. And so, but I think that's important. Those informal supports in the school, it, like Catherine said, it doesn't have to be, gosh, you're struggling, we better get you set up with a counselor. Because maybe there's some other things we can be doing before we get to that point, or universally with many of our students, or even a smaller targeted group of students before it would have to get to needing that one-on-one intervention. And that is needed. So it's definitely an important factor, an important piece. But I think we have an opportunity in the school to do a lot of that informal mentoring with the different adults in our building, not just teaching staff. But we have a lot of staff in buildings that we can be using to mentor with kids and partner and help build relationships. So I think that informal piece is really important, and we have a real, you know, it's a positive at school. We just have a real opportunity to be doing a lot of those things.
Are we asking too much of our teachers to fill that role of a mental health provider?
I know. I think that could be argued. I really do, because I do think there are teachers, understandably so, who did not start teaching because they were going to be a mental health expert or provider. So I think that is a really fine line of what we ask teachers to do. Which is why I think it's important that we have like those bigger intervention, bigger if that's the right term, but you know, just more intense intervention. Our school social workers, our school counselors, our school psychologists that are trained, they are mental health experts in the school, using them as much as we can. So the burden isn't all on teachers. A lot is put on teachers to meet all sorts of state mandates and testing and curriculum. So it is a balance of what can be like woven into the natural discussion. We don't want just today's the big topic. Today is the big topic of we're going to talk about a feeling. You know, it needs to be a little bit more natural and just, you know, part of what they do. But I think it's a fine line. I definitely think we can't ask too much of our teachers.
Alicia Place, Community Services Coordinator for the La Crosse School District, is here with us today to talk about a new initiative to create and improve trauma-informed care for children. She's joined by Catherine Kolkmeyer, Executive Director of the La Crosse Medical Health Science Consortium. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on trauma-informed care and how it can help children in the La Crosse area. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. We know a person's childhood can have a huge impact on their adult lives, and this is especially true if that childhood includes a traumatic event or continued trauma. Now, the La Crosse Mental Health Science Consortium is working to improve outcomes for children who have experienced trauma by creating and improving trauma-informed care. We're talking about the initiative with Catherine Kolkmeyer, Executive Director of the La Crosse Medical Health Science Consortium, and Alicia Place, Community Services Coordinator for the School District of La Crosse. Catherine, I wonder if you could share maybe how the consortium kind of plans to track their success on this project, and maybe how do we know that we're on the right track when it comes to addressing mental health?
Well, one of the things that we were very fortunate to be able to do as part of the Better Together grant is to hire an evaluator. And so we hired Diana Diaz-Granados, who is working for us regularly on this project, looking at both the work of Better Together and of the larger resilience and trauma-informed community effort to develop an evaluation plan. So in addition to tracking things like how many people come to our trainings and how many people are attending different events or going through different parts of the project, we're also measuring the effectiveness of those programs. We're looking at the impact that it's making on people who are participating. We're talking about getting some, not informal, but qualitative information, listening to people's stories about how their perspectives have changed over time, how they're doing things differently. So one of the components of the resilience and trauma-informed community effort is we've established there's some folks in different organizations who have attended it who we're calling champions. And these are people who are really enthusiastic about this. They've experienced that perspective shift. They see how this can affect their work differently. And they are going out into their own organizations and working with their leadership and their colleagues to change practices, maybe even change policies. Right now, we're still at the early stages, but we're trying to support them on a regular basis so that they are constantly connected to one another across sectors. They're also connected by the information that we give them in terms of resources that we're making available to everyone who is a champion, so that they always have access to that and to each other. And then we'll bring them together periodically to learn from one another about some of the changes that they have made. And we're interested in measuring that as well and seeing what kind of changes that they can make, whether it's something simple like changing some of their processes, changing the way they talk to their clients, changing the way they interview people, to how things happen day to day in their work, depending on who their clients or patients or students might be. What information are they gathering? How are they interacting in a different way? How are their discipline processes changing? So we want to know how this is playing out in the community. And that's one way of measuring it. Our ultimate measurement, the what we're calling our indicator, which is the single data point that we're looking at in Better Together that we've been asked to kind of use as our guide, comes from a survey that's given to youth every 2 years called the Youth Risk Behavior Survey. This is offered in all high schools in the area, as well as a number of the middle schools. And it's given, like I said, it's given every 2 years. And it asks questions about risky behaviors that kids are involved in, smoking and drinking and sexual practices, but also in looking at their mental health. And one of the questions on that test is asking about the risk of depression. So it's a question that asks about whether youth have felt sad or hopeless for a two-week period of time over the last year to the point that it interrupted their daily activities. And we're considering the answer to that question to be indicative of the risk of depression. So that number we're watching very carefully. Currently, it's about 28% in our community. So, or that's across La Crosse County, all of the schools and all of the districts. And we're trying to bring that number down. So by all the other work that we're doing, we think that will ultimately impact that number by giving the skills to kids and giving skills to the people around them that will bring down that risk of depression by giving them the skills and resources that they need.
You know, Alicia, I wanted to also ask about a project I recently heard from the La Crosse School District called Handle with Care. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you could share a little bit about what that is and how that initiative got started.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very excited about our Handle with Care project. It got started a couple of years ago. An investigator with the La Crosse Police Department, Corey Brandel, actually called me to say, you know, hey, when we are investigating some really difficult things with kiddos involved, would it be helpful if we sent you some information, just not details, but just some information so you'd be able to support that kiddo at school? And it's called Handle with Care. And fast forward, we did that a little bit informally. And so fast forward a couple of years, and our community services office with the district this year decided we needed to really formalize that process. And the La Crosse Police Department was completely on board of doing that. So we were able to have a memorandum of understanding developed where if our officers, not just investigators, but any officer, responds to a call and there are school-age kids present where something difficult has happened, something potentially traumatic, has awoken the kids in the middle of the night, we will get notified via special email saying, just handle these kids with care. It comes to a central place in the district, my office, and then I'm able to speak with our pupil services staff, so school social workers, counselors, and tell them that information, and then they can decide what the best way to go about handling that is, who needs to know, who might not need to know. touching base with that kiddo, providing some services to them, that's, you know, support network, and maybe even reaching out to the family and providing some support to the family is applicable and relevant. What's been really exciting as we've had these conversations with the La Crosse Police Department is we approached the La Crosse County Sheriff's Department, and they were interested in. And then we started talking to our counterparts at Holman School District, and they were interested in West Salem and Bangor and Vernon County Sheriff, because we have students in the La Crosse School District who actually live in Vernon County, Town of Campbell, West Salem Police, Bangor Police. And so we actually have a memorandum of understanding between all of those different agencies. And the great thing about that is if there is a family in Holman and have police contact with Holman PD, Holman PD can notify La Crosse School District. We can go across, you know, the city lines for that. It's one-way communication between law enforcement and the district, but it just gives us information. Sometimes it's not even details. It literally just says, these kiddos had police contact, handle them with care. But it allows us to give that information to our staff at the school, and just allows us to help her, you know, help put that safety network in place if it needs to be, support that kiddo, just maybe how we approach them. It always should be in a caring and kind way, but maybe just more understanding of what they're going through, why they might come to school tired, why their homework might not have gotten done last night. So that communication is just a really great example of how it's a whole community working to help students while they're at school, but also to help families and students when they're not at school. We can all really work together to do that. So it's a really exciting program. We're very fortunate in this area to have a lot of law enforcement who have been through very specialized training. Many have gone through youth first aid, mental health first aid, adult mental health first aid. They know when they're on the scene how to work with young kids and adults. So I really believe that having our law enforcement being sensitive at the scene and then being able to have that soft handoff to school professionals who can kind of handle it on their end too really just makes that wraparound for that family and that kiddo that much stronger. So it's a very exciting project. Holman School District and their PD have kind of been doing it also informally. This just really people-proofs it too. So if somebody moves departments or goes to a different job, that it's still, the process is still in place. It's still going to be happening for our families.
Right. How are educators finding out about the, you know, if a kid had been through a potentially traumatic experience? I mean, were those educators getting that knowledge before that this practice?
Sometimes, and that was kind of the hard part, is sometimes depending if the kid shared with us. Maybe the students came and shared something about police were at our house last night, or sometimes parents would call and say, we're having a family emergency, or we're having a difficult time, or the police would reach out in part of their investigation to get more information. But it was really, there was kind of no rhyme or reason to it. And certainly there are kids who do not come to school and want to share or feel like they can share. Or there's not an opportunity to have that private conversation really quick. And so we didn't always know. So it was, we were finding out, probably not always, and we're still going to probably miss some. You know, part of this is getting into the habit of having this communication. But I think it's Handle with Care program gives a better chance that we're going to get that information and do the right thing with it, do something productive with it.
You mentioned that there is not everybody is getting this information in the school district, that it's a select few. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if you can expand a little bit more about how the school district is protecting people's privacy mm-hmm. when it comes to these issues.
Absolutely. That's a huge piece because, you know, I think you just have to put yourself in that position of, if it were you, would you want to be the topic of conversation around the school? And everyone that works in the school setting are professionals, all of our staff. But I think that sometimes information, and I'm coming from the perspective, I'm a school social worker by trade, and so I feel like I've heard a lot of things. And I think sometimes that information is honestly really too hard to hear. And I think it can be really kind of this like secondary trauma for staff to hear. So we really have to think about who needs to know this information. I think we've alluded to it a couple of times. We don't necessarily need to know what happened, maybe just that something happened, because we want to protect people's privacy. We want to protect not everyone needs to be having the conversation, not everyone needs the information. And what can you really handle? I mean, there is compassion fatigue and secondary trauma. Those are real things. And putting all of that on teachers or staff when it's not necessary to still provide the same great care to students is something that we really have to take a look at. So we start with just notifying our school counselor or social worker who is at the building. And then it's really a thoughtful plan about who needs to know from there.
That's Alicia Place from the La Crosse School District here with us today to talk about how K-12 schools, local healthcare providers, researchers, and other organizations are incorporating trauma-informed care for kids. She's joined by Catherine Kolkemeyer from the La Crosse Medical Health Science Consortium. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Catherine, I wonder, you know, this issue of secondary trauma or compassion fatigue, I wonder if that's something that the consortium has looked at or is, you know, kind of studying in this attempt to be more trauma-informed in providing care.
Certainly there's a component of being trauma-informed that includes self-care. Mm-hmm. And that's something a lot of the partners that are part of this effort have been very instrumental in teaching us more about the importance of self-care. I know it's something that's been discussed quite a bit in the schools, and it's something that we encourage with all of our champions, all of the organizations that have been involved in this effort. And like I said, some of our partners have gone very far with that in terms of making sure that anybody who is interacting with anyone who has been through a really traumatic situation also not just provides help to that person, but provides some self-care for themselves, because then you do need to take some time to understand that you're being impacted as well by what you're hearing. And so that's definitely a component of this. And we're really glad to have such a broad team that goes across multiple organizations that bring that expertise to the table.
As this project continues, I wonder how you hope it shapes or influences the future of what mental health care looks like in our community.
I hope that it provides a whole new layer of prevention to this community so that we can, as a community, assist those who provide mental health care overall, just in the way we treat each other, and to help address some of the issues that, like I said, that don't need to rise to the level of a crisis or an emergency, but can be addressed just among people talking to one another, or students with teachers, or patients with physicians or other care providers, so that we are treating people differently. We're hoping ultimately for culture change, where the community as a whole is more understanding of one another. That's a tall order. It could take a very long time. It's going to go beyond the life of this grant. But we've had more than 1,500 people go through this initial training that we'd set up. So and that's not even by advertising. That's just word of mouth. That's been people hearing about it and saying, I want to learn more about it. So we have hope that might actually start to take hold in different organizations. And we're working with those who are enthusiastic about it. And so we will reach more and more people the bigger this gets. So I think that, like I said, this is going to provide a layer of protection and a layer of prevention that just gives people more resources up front and more avenues to turn to in terms of receiving help from your peers before things become a crisis, so that those who are working in mental health providing and providing that kind of health care are really focusing on the cases that need it the most.
Is this effort going to need new investment to kind of support these resources?
I think the investment really happens at the organizational level. So that's kind of the beauty of this, is by dispensing these skills and getting that in front of everyone and working it into the organizations that already exist, each organization is going to decide what this looks like. And each individual who is involved in this work decides what that will look like, what changes might be made. There's a lot that can be done without funding. There's a lot that can be done without that kind of investment of money, but can also be accomplished by investment of time or investment of attention on changing the way you do the work that you do. We're not asking anybody to take on additional work. We're asking them to look at how they do their work and see if there's a way they can do it in a more trauma-informed way or a more resilience-building way, which we hope is not something that's going to take up a lot of their time or a lot of their money. So that's really what helps this grow, is that it doesn't really have a price tag on it. There might be elements of it that will have some costs, in which case we might seek additional funding. But right now, we're really trying to change the way things happen in the community already.
And very, very briefly, as we wrap up here, Alicia, do you feel like schools are going to need continued investment to help address some of these trauma-informed issues?
Yeah, I think really, again, similarly to what Catherine said, there's a lot that we can be just changing how we do things, that it's not going to necessarily be new work. It's just going to be changing a little bit of how we do things. I think this project is exciting, too, though, because it also educates adults and parents, and that's where we really need to get upstream by letting parents know that these are the outcomes and this is what can happen, and here's some positive ways we can influence and build resilience in our kids. And I think this project allows us to do that too, and that's an exciting piece.
Alicia Place, Community Services Coordinator for the School District of La Crosse, and Catherine Kolkmeyer, Executive Director of the La Crosse Medical Health Science Consortium, joining us to talk about trauma-informed care for children and how the consortium is using this practice to improve local communities' mental health. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers.